We are on Perek Lamed Daled, Pasuk. Well, we just finished up Pasuk Chaf Hei.
184.
In the original text.
One and only.
Last time we went into a lengthy explanation of what the Rebbe writes about the whole concept of Bar Mitzvah. We learn out from this Pasuk of Shimon and Levi, each man taking his sword, and the fact that the Torah calls him Ish, and even though Levi at that time was only 13 years old, so we see that the age of Bar Mitzvah is at the age of 13. And we discussed then what the Rebbe says in the Sicha, that why do we learn out the age of Bar Mitzvah from seemingly Jews doing things that Yaakov Avinu was upset about? And we learned because sometimes a Jew has to take the bull by the horn, so to speak, and go on the offensive for the sake of Yiddishkeit. So in Pasuk Chavav, well, at the end of Chavav, it says, V'yargu kol zachar, they killed all the male. They went into the city, they killed out every single person. Now, why did they do that? Why did they kill out all the male? So we learned a number of things. Number one, because they were guilty for not putting Shechem on trial, or because they regretted the fact that they did the bris, and so on. So the Pasuk says in Chavav, V'eschamer v'eschem b'nei, Chamer and Shechem his son, Hargu l'fichariv, they killed by sword. And it says the Med, the Pasuk says that first they killed out the whole city, then they killed out Chamer and Shechem. So the Mepharshim explain, why did they do it? So the Sipurna says, until they killed out the whole city, they didn't find out where Shechem and Chamer were. Secondly, they killed all the bodyguards. So once they killed the bodyguards, they were able at that time to kill Chamer and Shechem. But like this, they were the king, so they were protected, so to speak, by the bodyguards. But once they killed out the whole city, so then they were able to kill, this is what the Aruch Chaim says. It was. It sounds like it was a big city. I mean, the big cities in those days is relative to and the city of Nineveh had 600,000 people. You know, more than 600,000 people, it says. I don't know, relatively speaking, it was a big city. I mean, it's big enough that Yaakov Avinu was afraid that Shimon and Levi would have gotten killed. They took away Dina from the house of Shechem. And they took her out. Now, one of the reasons the Mepharshim bring out, the Rebbeinu and Apeshitz brings down, that what's the reason why they killed out the whole city, and they chose that the people should do a bris. So he adds another interesting point. The brothers could have killed out the whole city themselves, even if they didn't circumcise themselves. But the brothers were afraid of that all the Goyim are going to stick up for Shechem and go chase, like Yaakov Avinu was afraid that the Goyim are going to chase them. But once Shechem and his people circumcised themselves, so they alienated themselves from all the other Goyim. They said, oh, now you guys belong to the Jews, we're going to stick up for you. So it wasn't only to weaken the city, but it was basically that the Goyim shouldn't stick up for the rest of the people in Shechem, and therefore they left. Now, it says they killed Chamer and Shechem. Vayichu as Dina mibei Shechem. They took Dina. The question, what do you mean they took Dina? It implies Vayichu, you take somebody. That means Dina, the pasuk implies Dina didn't go with them. They had to take her. Taking means like against her will. You know, they took her. Why didn't she just go? They should have said Dina left with them. Why did it say Vayichu? So Rashi Grada brings down that they said, I'm on the wrong page over here. Rashi's later on in Chumash. But the Medrash says that Dina refused to go. Dina said, I'm not leaving Shechem because I'm embarrassed, I'm shameful, nobody's going to want to marry me anymore, nobody's going to have anything to do with me. And therefore, the Gemara says, they quote Ravun, and the Gemara says, Dina refused to go. Shimon promised to marry her. So when Shimon married her, then was willing to marry her, promised he'll marry his sister, so then she was willing to go out. Now, other Mefarshim learn that she didn't marry Shimon because it was mamish brother and a sister, the same mother and the same father. You know, it was real incest. But it says that she lived in Shimon's house. According to one opinion in the Medrash, it says that she just, here the Ramban learns, she lived in Shimon's house, not as a wife, but closed up over there as a widow. She went down with them to Egypt, and there she died.
She never married.
No. And he writes, Shimon brought her back into Canaan for burial, for Dina buried in Canaan, and the Ramban says, she's buried in the city of Arbel, near the grave of Nitei Ha'arbeli. So in other words, based on the... Nitei Ha'arbeli. So who's one of the people from the Mishnah. So there, she's buried in the city of Arbel, according to the Ramban. So obviously it could be they don't even know where approximately the grave is.
And the husband didn't have another wife?
Who? According to this opinion, she never married.
No, but the brother didn't have another wife?
Shimon, yeah, but in those days they had many wives. Before the Ben Gash, how many? Huh?
He doesn't have one.
I know, you see that? Some people had 5, 18, 12, and some people don't.
Are we caught it or what?
Yeah.
How many wives did this
person have? At that time, the only one that was limited was a king. A king was limited at 18.
Don't worry, he's just
hey, listen, a king is the only one that had limitation. He was allowed to marry 18 wives. Now, a man is allowed to marry as many women as he wants, providing, halacha says, he is able to support them.
Even more than 18?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm saying not Pelegish. No.
How did that become
happen? Rabbeinu Gershom, who lived 1,000 years ago, he got stuck with a second wife that messed him up bad. She almost got him killed, and because of that, he made a decree that was accepted universally amongst Ashkenazic Jews, not amongst Sephardic Jews, amongst Ashkenazic Jews. Officially, the decree lasted 1,000 years, but it was automatically continued indefinitely.
But nowadays, it is forbidden to have more than one wife, too.
By whom?
I know
only Rabbeinu Gershom.
I know it was exception that people from Yemen come with more than one wife. It was some exception from Rabbeinu.
Because in Israel they have a law of the land that you cannot have polygamy, which is more than one wife. In America there's also a law you're not allowed to have more than one wife. There's a letter printed in the Kutas Sichas that the Rebbe was asked about a Sephardi that didn't have any children from his first wife, and he wanted to marry a second wife to be able to have children. And the Rebbe answered him, I cannot answer you to give you permission because I'm Ashkenazic, and Ashkenazi Jews cannot have more than one wife. But the Rebbe said, you should ask your Sephardic authorities. You know, this is a long, long time ago. This is before the land of Israel forbid it as a country. And the Rebbe told him, that you should explain to your wife that this you're adding a second wife is not, God forbid, to diminish the love of the first one. Just be able to do the mitzvah pro avu, and it would be beneficial for her, and so on and so forth. In the Mishnah, in Yevamos, when a man has two wives, each one is called the tzara, the problem of the next. The guy has two wives, each one is called the problem for the next because they're jealous of one another, getting the husband's full attention. But, one second. So Shimon, I'm sure he had other wives because he had other kids. Okay? Now, according to one opinion, according to Rashi later, that Shaul ben Akhnanis, who was one of Shimon's sons, was Taka's son that Shimon had with Dina. Okay? And they had Taka's son. The kid was not a mamzer, and I'll explain to you in a second why. If it's incest, why isn't the kid a mamzer? And there's an explanation in the commentaries why the kid would not be a mamzer. But according to other opinions, because Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar, Dina did become pregnant from Shechem, like we learned, and he gave birth to a girl by the name of Asnas. The brothers did not want to keep her in the house. So Yaakov Avinu wrote Hashem's name on a metal plate, and sent her off to be that she should be protected. She ended up from a field that they left her. She ended up in Egypt. She ended up in Potiphar's house. She ended up marrying Yosef. So Yosef married his niece, Asnas, who was from his sister's daughter, but her father was Shechem.
Why did she go to kosher to be Yosef's wife? She was not enough kosher to be in the house of the brother.
The brother didn't want to because of shame.
Shame is what
embarrassment. Not shame, embarrassment. English shame. English, the word.
Shameful.
Shameful. Okay. So they took...
You can marry your niece?
In the Gemara it says it's a mitzvah to marry your niece. Rav Yehuda HaChassid.
You have a niece?
Rav Yehuda HaChassid. Rav Yehuda HaChassid writes that it should not be done. Rav Yehuda HaChassid writes it should not be done. The commentaries on Rav Yehuda HaChassid ask, how could he say it's forbidden when the Gemara says it's a mitzvah? And they write, but the custom today is that you don't. You don't marry a niece. Not that you're not allowed to, because the Gemara says, Shemi Yechap al Basa Chaysay. But according to Torah law, and this is done, by the way, in many circles, people do marry first cousins. Gene-wise, no. In fact, the reason why it says in the Gemara, it's a mitzvah to marry a niece, they quote the pasuk that says, Mipsarcha al tesalim. Don't hide yourself from your own flesh. Mm-hmm. And according to Torah law, I know in civil law it's not necessarily allowed, but in Torah law, first cousins couldn't marry each other. There are many families, by the way, that in the genes there's problems with the children because of it. Many families not. But there, I know a lot of people that marry their first cousins. But today the accepted custom, because of this Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, is that they don't marry, uncles don't marry nieces. Thank you. Another thing, which is also interesting, is the question according to Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid of two brothers marrying two sisters. Two brothers marrying two sisters. Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid writes, two brothers should not marry two sisters, even according to Allah, it is allowed. The Rebbe's father, and his mother, the Rebbe's father's brother, Reb Levick, the Rebbe's father's brother, he had a brother by the name of Reb Shmuel, they married two sisters. The Rebbe's father and his uncle married two sisters. And the Rebbe Rashab said they should do it, but they should live in two different cities. And therefore, there are cases of two brothers marrying two sisters today, but they live in different cities.
What is the reason?
Rabbi Yehuda
HaChassid. So
the custom is that if they do it, they live in...
No.
Saying two brothers marrying two sisters.
Yes. No? Yeah.
What? Was a niece. His second marriage was a cousin.
His brother's daughter.
Yeah, he was the youngest. He married his. You're right. That Marash in the first marriage married his niece, and then she passed away right afterwards. Right. Yeah.
When you say it's a mitzvah, if somebody marries his niece, you need an additional mitzvah other than the marriage mitzvah?
Yeah. In other words, it's a good shidduch, the Gemara says. There's a mitzvah. The Gemara says also the expression, it's a mitzvah to remarry your divorcee. Unless if you're a Kohen. That doesn't mean everybody should go divorce their wives and remarry them. First of all, they might not want to take you back. Gotta be careful. No. There are mitzvahs in the Torah.
That you never do.
No, there are mitzvahs in the Torah that you have to do. Like tefillin, you have to put on tefillin. Shabbat, you have to keep Shabbat. There's certain mitzvahs, for instance, the mitzvah of shechting meat. There's no mitzvah in the Torah, you have to slaughter meat. The Torah says, if you want to eat meat, you have to slaughter it. There's no mitzvah in the Torah, you must have a mezuzah. If a guy wants to live in the park, a homeless guy wants to live in the park, there's no mitzvah to buy a house. The Torah says, if you have a house, you need to put a mezuzah. If you have a four-cornered garment, you need tzitzis. All these things the Torah says. The Torah says, if you want to separate yourself from your wife, then it has to be done through a get. But there's no mitzvah to give a get. Huh? Yeah, that. There are many times, yeah. So then there's no Yibum or Chalitza. No, the Rambam talks about that. That's not a problem. The problem is you have the same mother-in-law. That's the problem. Okay. Let's say Nam as Bekadam Chazik Chavchetz. So he took Dina because that was the only way she was willing to go. By the way, he brings down another opinion over here from the Gemara in Bava Basra that Dina married Iyuv. It says, another tradition recorded in Bava Basra, that Dina married Iyuv and had a most positive influence on him, on Job. She married Iyuv, according to one opinion. So there's a number of opinions. One opinion says she married Iyuv. One opinion is she married Shimon. Another opinion is she didn't marry anybody.
And it was his first wife that died, or the second wife.
Who?
First wife.
I don't know about Eve's first wife. Now I'm in Chumash. I don't know anything about Eve. I don't know. Asenem as Bekadam, the sheep, the cattle, Ves Chamereim, the donkeys, Ves Kol Asher Ba'ir, everything that was in the city, Ves Asher Basad, and everything which was in the field, Lokocha, they took. They took everything that was around. Now, No, I skipped the pasuk. I'm sorry. Chavzayin. I turned the page and I skipped the pasuk. Thank you. at least somebody thought they were listening. B'nei Yaakov ba. No, this is very important pasuk. B'nei Yaakov ba chalolonim. The children of Yaakov came on the corpse. Val yavezo ir, and they plundered the city. Eshetim achesin, that impurified their sister. Okay. So what does this mean? They said this is the reason why they did it. Why did they do it? Another one. The question over here, as the Mefarshim explained, it doesn't say who the Bnei Yaakov were, because in the pasuk before it says Shnei Bnei Yaakov, Shimon and Levi. So when it says here Bnei Yaakov bo al chalolim, does it mean Shimon and Levi, or does it mean everybody, all the brothers? So the pasuk itself is not really clear. But the Mefarshim say, Targum Yenison, and this is the opinion of most opinions, the rest of the brothers came. When Shimon and Levi were leaving with Dina, all the other brothers came. That's why it says, Bo, they came. Okay. Now the Arachaim says, now the question is, why weren't they stealing from the city of Shechem? So the Arachaim HaKadosh explains, because they had a payment due to them for Beishas. By raping Dina, they cause shame to the family. If you embarrass somebody and shame somebody, there's a monetary damage you have to pay. In Shulchan Aruch, there's a whole section, if you embarrass somebody, they can take you to Beis Din and you have to pay. For instance, if you embarrass a scholar, they say you have to pay litra de dava, a litra of gold. There's an amount you have to pay, according to Halacha, for embarrassing people. So because the brother, and the Gemara says, embarrassment is based on the prominence of the person. A prominent person gets more embarrassed than a simple person, or anyway he's embarrassed. And it depends who embarrasses the person. So because Yaakov's children were very prominent people, and they were insulted by Shechem, who was also a prominent person, so they were very, very embarrassed. So therefore there was a monetary damage to the family. And therefore the brothers came, they didn't agree with the killing. Only Shimon and Levi did the killing. But the brothers still maintain their halachically, they can get it. And therefore, now the question is, there's a rule, the Rechaim says, what happens to Kimle Bedrabamine? And this is an interesting halacha. If a person is obligated, two punishments, death and monetary. The din is, you get the bigger of the punishments, you don't get the smaller one. For instance, God forbid, if somebody kills somebody, And while they're killing him, they rip his garment. It has to be in the same act. In the same act of killing, they rip the guy's garment. So now the guy gets capital punishment for killing the person. But the children of the deceased said, hey, you tore his garment, you have to pay for the garment. We're the estate, you have to pay for the garment. So the halacha is, we learn now from Sukkim, Kimle Bedrabamine. Kimle means you give him, Bedrabamine is the bigger one of the punishments. Okay, so therefore if somebody is obligated death and money with the same act, you only get death, you don't have to pay the money. So the question over here is, the people of Shechem are obligated because of their action to die, so why should the brothers be able to get the monetary settlement also? So the Chaim, he brings down from the Arachayim that Kimle B'drabimine doesn't apply by a guy.
And what is
only by a Jew. They came on the corpses to empty off the dead bodies, said money on them or whatever.
They took their clothes and money and what was on them?
Why the whole city has to pay? The shame was only done with the...
But the fact that they didn't stop them and they didn't put them on trial, so they all agreed to it.
But that's only punishable by death, not monetary. The monetary is only because they shamed them.
The whole city shamed them because it was done publicly in front of the whole city. So the whole city shamed Yaakov's children. Yeah.
But weren't they idol worshippers?
So?
I'm sure not allowed to have any benefit from anything
that's got to do. Oh, one second. Mm-hmm. Yaakov Avinu soon tells them, it's a good point. Yaakov Avinu is going to tell them, get rid of it. Mm-hmm. You're right. Because they're idol worshippers, the garments were impure, everything was impure. So the question over here is, the people of Shechem are obligated because of their action to die. So why should the brothers be able to get the monetary settlement also? So the Chaim, he brings down from the Arachayim that Kimle B'drabimine doesn't apply by a guy.
And what is Ba'ol
HaKalanim? Only by a Jew.
What does it mean, Ba'ol HaKalanim?
They came on the corpses to empty off the dead bodies, said money on them or whatever.
They took their clothes and money and what was on them?
Yeah. Why the whole city has to pay? The shame was only done with the...
But the fact that they didn't stop them and they didn't put them on trial, so they all agreed to it.
But that's only punishable by death, not monetary. The monetary is only because they shamed them.
The whole city shamed them because it was done publicly in front of the whole city. So the whole city shamed Yaakov's children. Yeah.
But weren't they idol worshippers?
So?
I'm sure not allowed to have any benefit from...
Oh, one second. Mm-hmm. Yaakov Avinu soon tells them, it's a good point. Yaakov Avinu is going to tell them, get rid of it. You're right. Because they're idol worshippers, the garments were impure, everything was impure. Yaakov said to them, chain, get rid of them. Get rid of the clothes, not the money. Well, the money they also buried. Yeah.
How do they decide that they're entitled to do this? There's no judge or any kind of mechanism to say, okay, yes, therefore you...
The brothers themselves acted as judges. There's a rule in halacha, there's an argument really in the Gemara, if Ovid inish dina lanafshi, can a person take the law into his own hands or not? For instance, if I know you owe me money, can I just go into your house and take what you owe me? Not a loan, but you stole something from me. Can I just go into your... I have to take you to court. Bezdin, I'm saying. So one opinion in the Gemara, and that's the halacha, by the way, that Ovid inish dina lenafshei, that if I feel there's no other way of getting it, let's say I know through the court I can't prove it, but I know it's mine, and I'm an honest person, I can go get it back from you, even though I without going to court. Now, which court should Shimon and Levi go to? There was no court to go to. There's no court for the brothers to go to. So they took the law into their own hands. They knew what the halacha was. Again, keeping in mind the fact that these are tzaddikim. You know, they're not gang members. You're talking about Shimon Reuven, Shimon Levi. You don't mean you're talking about the Shvatim. So they obviously felt up. They deserve it.
It's all for slaughtering. This
whole slaughtering.
It's all for blood. This one,
it's a big bloody mess.
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard to reconcile the fact that the king can be.
But that's what we said last week. The Torah teaches us that when it comes to desecration of a Jewish child, when it comes to desecration of God's name, you have to be willing to fight. That's what the Torah teaches us. That's what the Torah is teaching us. That when that child, Jewish child, is being defiled, okay? For instance, there is, and this is a unique difference between Jewish law and civil law. Do you know that according to civil law, if I see two people fighting, and one guy's beating up the next guy, I have no legal obligation to save that person. If I see somebody getting mugged or robbed, I'm not talking about morally. Legally, I have no obligation to save that person. They cannot take me to court. Why didn't you save me? They cannot do that. According to civil law, if you see somebody drowning, God forbid, and you have the ability to save them, and you don't, you cannot be prosecuted in law. In Torah law, there's a mitzvah in the Torah, which is a very powerful mitzvah, Leisamei dal dam reyacha. You're not allowed to stand idly by the blood of your friend. If you see somebody drowning and you have an ability to save them, you have a biblical mitzvah to save them. If you see somebody getting mugged and you have the ability to, you don't have to risk your life. Right? And this is why Yaakov Avinu screamed at Shimon and Levi. Because Shimon and Levi felt that people from Shechem were to get killed. Yaakov Avinu said, yeah, maybe they have a right, then maybe they should be killed, but you guys don't have to risk your lives to do it. And Yaakov Avinu screamed at the kids, look what's going to happen. Everybody's going to chase us now. Everybody's going to chase us. We're a small amount of people. You're soon going to learn the Pasuk, same Mitzvah, we're a very few amount of people. We have to risk your life to kill Shechem? Take your daughter and get out. What do you have to kill the city for? And that's why Yaakov really was not so much opposed to what they did. Yaakov Avinu was afraid more of the repercussions of what was going to happen. Yaakov Avinu says, you don't have to risk your life. It's similar. The Rebbe came out with a campaign many years ago. The Jews have an obligation, according to Halacha, it's really a Rambam. The Rambam says that a Jew has a Torah obligation to make sure a goy, a non-Jew, keeps the seven Noahite laws. The Rambam writes, a Jew has an obligation to make sure that a non-Jew keeps the seven mitzvahs. So the Rebbe came out with a campaign a number of years ago that not only a Jew is responsible for other Jews, but a Jew has a responsibility to make sure the non-Jews keep their mitzvahs. So all the complainers, you know, not Chabadniks, the other people used to complain every time the Rebbe came out with something good. And it was interesting. They never came out with anything good themselves. Anything good the Rebbe came out with, they said, no, what are you doing? You don't like this idea? Come up with a different idea. No, that not. But they only complained. So they complained that why is the Rebbe starting a new campaign? It was unheard of in Yiddishkeit, unprecedented in Yiddishkeit throughout generations. In Europe, nobody ever went and apostatized to go, not for going to become Jewish, but for going to keep the seven mitzvahs. So the Rebbe, the next Rebbe, when he heard the criticism, said, so to speak, where are your brains? The Rebbe said, there's an obligation, according to Halacha, the Rebbe quoted the Rambam, that a Jew has to make sure a goy keeps the seven mitzvahs. But there's no obligation for a Jew to risk his life to do it. The Rebbe said, in Europe, being a Jew itself, you were killed. Can you imagine if a Jew went over to a communist Russian, to went over to Stalin, hey, keep your seven mitzvahs. He would get killed. So in Europe, the Rebbe said, the possibility didn't exist because a Jew is not obligated to give up his life to teach a guy to keep seven mitzvahs. But the Rebbe says in America, where you have the opportunity and nobody's going to kill you, the Torah says you have an opportunity, an obligation. It wasn't done in Europe. Of course it wasn't done in Europe, because they would have gotten killed if they did it. Simple logic. What?
Saving another person's life, is that just between a Jew and a jury?
Both. The Gemara says, whoever saves a life is as if they saved the entire world. Why? We're coming up to Rosh Hashanah, yeah? The world was created, started with one man. This one guy by the name of Adam eventually gave birth to 6 billion people. What do we have in the world today? Right? The whole world started from one person. So if you save one life, that guy can eventually again create 6 billion people. So it's like you saved the world.
You could desecrate Shabbos to extend the Goy's life?
Let's not get into that now.
Why?
Because it's not for tape for sure.
So put on pause.
Where's pause? Then everybody's going to call me. So it doesn't matter what you said. Okay. It's not a joke. It's real. Okay, they took... By Avezah, they emptied out the city, which impurified Dina. And by the way, this is the reason, because they defiled the sister. That's the reason of why they did what they did. Okay, and that's why he said, Asher Tim'u, the Mefarshim explained, the Arachayim also explains, Tim'u is plural. They defiled, even though Shechem was the only one that did it. Why does the Pasuk say they defiled it? So they're right, because they kidnapped her and they're guilty of kidnapping. I mean, they're all part of the scheme, so they're all to blame for it. Okay. Another thing, the Sipuna writes that Shechem, they were all to blame, because if Shechem knew that they wouldn't have backed him, the people of the city, they wouldn't have done it. He wouldn't have done it. He knew he had the backing of the city, so he did it. Okay, then the bus. Oh yeah.
What about the children? I mean, the innocent people.
They didn't kill the children. Mm-hmm. We'll soon see. It says they killed the male. Male means over the adults. No, because we'll see in the next pasuk. As seinem as pekadim as chamereim, their sheep, their cattle, their donkeys, ves kol ha-shebair, everything in the city, ves ha-shebasad, everything which was in the field, meaning the stray animals, the domestic animals, everything. Okay.
How long did all this take?
A few hours.
Few hours with two swords to get rid of the whole city.
How long does it take to whop, 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 whop? You know how many chickens a sheikh checks an hour? In the big companies, it doesn't matter. How many chickens do you think the big companies checked an hour?
Depends how kosher you want.
No, go sheikh.
60.
60.
In 1 hour?
Yeah, one sheikh.
100.
Try 1,200.
In 1 hour?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
1,200.
Yeah, yeah. The big companies do 1,100 an hour per sheikh. They shecht and arrest it. They do it. So it's not. So 1 hour you can kill a lot of people.
Is this empire or?
I'm not saying anything now. Let's go. By the way, it's possible to do.
Yeah, they're called Zaki chickens.
Okay. Ves kol chelam 29. Ves kol chelam and all their wealth, even though chayil means. Rashi explains chayil means strength. So strength was their money. Ves kol chelam, all their wealth. Ves kol tapim, here it says they took the children. Ves neshem, and the women. Shavu vayavezu, they took. Ves kol hashem, they plundered, meaning they took it. Vayavez kol hashem bavayis, everything which was in the house. Now, the Barbanel explains, why did they take the women and kids? Because they didn't want that they should be able to tell the neighbors what happened. There should be a retaliation because the women would run to the neighbors, and then so they took everybody away. That for at least for a while, nobody should know what went on. That's called a sheba bais, all the movable property. Now the Ebenezer learns, called sheba bais is in Shechem and Chamer's house. Okay, because ba bais means a certain house, meaning whose house it was Shechem. We'll see when we get to the pasuk. We'll soon see. It doesn't say later in the pasuk that he gave back the women, so those he kept as servants or whatever. Vayayim Yaakov al Shimon v'Levi. Yes, sir.
They kept the woman as servants, and the woman just agreed to be their servants forever.
The problem is, we live in a wrong generation. You know, in the olden times when you went to war and you conquered a city, you took everybody in as captives. Do you know when pirates hijacked a ship or whatever, when pirated a ship, They took all the people for servants.
Why are we living in the wrong time? We're living in the right time.
The good old days.
The good old days, yeah. That's the way it was in the olden times. That was the accepted tradition.
I was in the camp against my will. They took me. Now they kill me.
That's no, but that was the traditional custom in those days was when you plundered camps, war, you took the people for slaves. I want you to know a lot of them, by the way, were better off for being slaves in well houses, well-to-do houses and this than they were in the, you know. I mean, for many, I'm not justifying slavery in any way, but there were many slaves that had it much better off being slaves. They were better fed, better treated. I'm not saying where people were cruel, but I'm saying there were many slaves that were treated very nicely. According to Torah law, the Gemara says, when you buy a slave, you're buying really a master, because you have to treat the slave better than you treat yourself. But even a goyish slave, the Torah says, you have to treat them very nicely. A goyish slave, basically, in the times of old, was like a boss and a worker relationship. Even a goyish slave, according to Halacha. There was not a lot, and this is a mistake people make about slavery, that slavery, according to Torah, was not cruelty. The only cruelty, so to speak, was that people were bought and sold like property. Not like humans, but as far as the treatment of them, the dignity, the Torah, you have to treat them like people. It was forbidden for a Jew to give a slave to do something for no reason at all, just to make him work. I mean, it was forbidden. You have to treat...
The Jewish laws of warfare, what techniques you can use, whether you can torture, whether
Torah says you cannot them, torture.
Whether you have to give them food.
If you take captives, you have to feed them. Yeah, there was no torturing of human beings, according to Torah. And the proof of it is, just from the famous proof from the Halacha, Sar Bali Chayim, torturing an animal, not a human, torturing an animal is biblically forbidden. It's not only an argument in the Gemara, is it biblically forbidden or rabbinically forbidden? The halacha is it's biblically forbidden. Not only does the Torah say you can't torture a person, you're not allowed to torture biblically an animal. According to Torah law, rodeos are forbidden, bullfights are forbidden, anything that an animal suffers with is forbidden biblically according to Torah law. According to Torah law, if you have an animal, you have to feed the animal before you eat yourself. So if the Torah, just taking that a step further, if the Torah demands, and I don't want to use the word respect for an animal, but dignity, I mean at least for an animal, so the Torah, how much more so for another human being, even if they're not Jewish, even if you capture them as a slave? The only thing was that you owned them, so to speak. They were with you forever. And if they gave birth to children, the children were yours forever. But as far as the treatment of them was, it was with ultimate, utmost respect and dignity.
But if something was going to benefit a human being, then it's allowed to kill the animal?
Oh, yeah. Sure, according to Torah law, all these animal experiments is definitely allowed. But again, you can't be cruel to an animal while you're doing it. But, you know, we're coming to Kapara soon, yeah? A guy, well, most people in this room know who he is, but 95% of the guys know him because he davens here many times in the morning, was doing Kapara in Simcha Manaka, either last year, 2 years ago, and an animal rights group came over to him because they found out about Kapara. They made one place he made a demonstration against kaparis, because it's cruelty to animals. So they were doing kaparis. This animal right guy came over, or a woman, whoever it was, came over to him and said, it's cruel to animals. You shouldn't be doing this. So he said to them, do you know that a block away from here is an abortion clinic where they're torturing humans? Why don't you go there and protest instead of coming to the animals? He said to them, don't you think that's worse? And they thought for a moment, they said, no, this is worse. Okay, this is worse. The purpose of everything in the world, I know we're going off, but it's the last year until after Tishrei, so who cares? Everything in the world was created for the sake of humans. Okay, humans were not created for animals. Animals, like the people think. Animals were created for humans. So if anything in the world could be utilized for benefit of humans, you're allowed to do it. Obviously, you can't torture an animal, you can't be cruel to the animal, but if you want to use an animal to find out a cure, even a, you know, in research, because all the cures that we have for all the illnesses basically came from animal experimentation. Those people that are fighting against animal experiments on animals, they, most of them wouldn't even be alive today if they didn't experiment on animals years ago. Because they would, their parents would have had a disease, or somebody would have had a disease that in those days people died from. They wouldn't even be here today. So, from one side, the Torah says the whole world, everything in the world is created to serve mankind. So animals are there to serve men. Not men were put there to serve animals, like the world thinks. So animal experimentation is allowed according to Torah. Obviously, like we said before, you can't be cruel to animals. You have to do it in a proper way, you know, whatever. But of course it has to be done. According to Torah, one second. According to Torah, if a person is a vegetarian because they feel it's cruelty to animals, they're making a very big mistake. Why? Because when you eat meat, you're doing the animal a favor. Like this, if you didn't eat the meat, the animal, what would be? The animal would eventually die, and it was born an animal, and it would die an animal. When a person eats meat, and it becomes the blood and flesh of the person, as the Gemara says, damu basa kipsari, becomes your blood and flesh, so then the animal turns into a human. So the animal, rather than staying an animal, is elevated to a human. So aren't you doing the animal a favor? Like this, it would die an animal. Like this, it's dying, I mean die, but it's elevated for a purpose of humanity. And it's not only when you eat it. If an animal was used in experiments, which saves eventually, even eventually, not right away, but this animal was part of the research that eventually helped a human being saved, so the animal was elevated to an ultimate purpose. It was elevated from animal to human. What can be better than that? Certain animals can be elevated by eating. Certain animals can be elevated by utilizing them differently. For instance, you can't eat pig, but you're allowed to benefit from pig. So you can't elevate it by eating it, but you can elevate it by utilizing it to serve Hashem better. I'll give you an example. I don't know if the women know this, but a football is called a pigskin. Okay? Because the football is made, now it's the football, it's Monday Night Football tonight, I mean, so it's the season. But you have a pigskin as a football. If a person takes a football and plays with kids, and through this becomes close to them, and brings them closer to Yiddishkeit, like the Rebbe once told somebody, you could be mekarev of kids to Yiddishkeit by playing ball with them, just like you could with learning with them. Because they see the way a Jew can play ball, and you could still be religious, and you become friendly. You know how many kids got involved in Yiddishkeit because of ball games and playing and all that? So when you take a football, and through the football you bring a kid closer to Yiddishkeit, so you know what happened? You elevated that pig it came from. Huh? I got to come back. Okay, yeah, what did you want? Perla. What do you want to ask?
I want to ask if it's permissible if somebody takes some remedies and they're using experiment on himself. If it's permissible.
Every case has to be asked a shailah separately. What are the percentages? There's a lot of issues involved. It's a shailah it personally has to be asked. Okay. No. Why vegetarian foods you think are kosher? They say the whole thing is bluff anyway, b'chlal.
Why?
Because they have that whole thing with the McDonald's, French fries had beef gravy in it, whatever. Okay. Vayeme Yaakov al Shimon v'Levi, Pasik Lamed. Vayeme Yaakov al Shimon and Levi. Vayeme Yaakov al Shimon v'Levi, Achayt and Macy, you, what's the expression of you in English? They call it odious, meaning you made me give a foul smell, so to speak. You made me look bad. Yeshiva Oritz and the people that live in the land, Baknani Prizi, the nation of Kanani and Prizi, Vanim say misbot, and we're a few in number. Venasva Alaibi Ikuni, and all the Goyim are going to gather against us and smite us. Vanishmadati Anil Basi, and me and my family will be destroyed. So Yaakov said to them, "Why did you do this to me? You made me unclear. You are Chartamaisi, you made me unclear. You made me like unclear waters. You made my mind is not clear." Yaakov Avinu was put into, Rashi explains, into a potentially mind-boggling situation, and he didn't know. Now, Rashi, the Mefarshim explained from Rashi that the Canaanim had a tradition that they're going to end up in Jewish hands. But the Goyim didn't think it's going to happen for who knows how long. It was going to happen for many generations. They didn't care. They said, let their great-grandchildren worry about it. But now that they saw Shimon and Levi starting to kill out Shechem, so now the Goyim are going to think that the Jews want to conquer the land now. So then they're going to have to self-defend themselves. So Yaakov Avinu says, hey, look what you're doing. You're making me a lot of problems with this. Yeah.
But if it was the right thing to do, why should that be a concern?
Well, like you said before, Yaakov Avinu said to them, it might be the right thing to do, but you don't have to give up your life for it. It's not something you're obligated to give up your life for. Yaakov Avinu felt that they're endangering themselves and him by doing the act that they did. He said, maybe they deserve to get killed, but it's not your business. You know, you're not obligated to go to the world. Okay, he gave me a bad reputation. We broke our word because there's different mefarshim explaining. The Sipurna says that how are they going to blemish Yaakov, like make him dirty waters, because they're going to say we didn't keep our word. We told you if you circumcise yourself, you're part of us. And all of a sudden, they go look what the Jews do. They tell the guy, circumcise yourself, you should become one. Then the they kill them all. So he said that's not good. Okay. So Yaakov Avinu says, I'm a small force of people. They're going to gather me and they're going to kill me and annihilate me. Okay. Vayemir and the brothers answered back. Hachazena yasis hachisenu. And Rashi says, the word hachazena means hefker. Should we make our sister free for all? They answered Yaakov back. Or the simple interpretation of hachazena is like hachazena. Should we make her like a harlot, like a prostitute, that, you know, whatever it is. We're not interested in doing it. Now, he brings on over here a number of concepts of so the speaker says, encapsulated in a few concepts. Shimon and Levi wanted to show, because the Jews were going back to the land of Canaan, they're going back to Canaan, they're going to have to live amongst the Goyim. Yaakov Avinu, the brothers now, instead, they're coming back for the first time to Canaan, right? There are a few people. They don't want to be stepped on by the nations. So before they even come home, so to speak, they're showing the world, don't stand up with us. That's the first thing they wanted to accomplish, that they... The people should be afraid of them rather than they fear people.
And you stand chapter.
Right. Now, another thing the Mefarshim explain, if they killed Shimon and Achamar and Shechem alone, Yaakov Avinu wouldn't have been upset. Nobody in the world could have been upset. Listen, they did an immoral act. They deserve to die. The big problem Yaakov Avinu had and everybody else had, because it says later on, there's a Medrash, that says that Yaakov had to stand. They came to Yaakov and they wanted to kill him. And Yaakov had to go with his sword and Yaakov had to stop them. He pushed it, Yaakov Avinu stopped it. Begins down from Sefer Yosher, 1 second. It says over here, but it says that the Yaakov Avinu mamash had to stand. You know, the Medrash records that even though Yaakov disapproved of his son's actions, nevertheless he recognized his responsibility to protect them. He took his sword and bow and stood at the entrance of Shechem and exclaimed, "If the heathens come to attack my sons, I will fight them." And that's how he stopped everybody. And he brings down from the Rambam brings him a Medrash. The surrounding nations actually waged 3 major wars against Yaakov's family, and if not for Yaakov Avinu standing there, they would have killed them.
He fought the 3 wars by himself?
Mm-hmm. So the Torah of it does not elaborate about this because it was a hidden miracle. So the Torah doesn't want to talk about it. See, there was mamash a fight going on, and Yaakov Avinu stopped it. So, from one side, the big problem was that they killed everybody else. And even then, it says that when Yaakov Avinu cursed Shimon and Levi later, he cursed their anger. Ordered apam ki oz. He never cursed them. He just cursed what they did. Here. He brings that interesting, but he adds a note to it. Abar Benel, whose comment should perhaps be viewed from the background of his experience as the leader of Spanish Jewry under the Spanish Inquisition, the Abar Benel writes that the act of the brothers demonstrates that there are times when it is worthwhile to risk lives in order to preserve Jewish self-respect. He continues that God apparently ratified this their philosophy by causing the Canaanites to fear the family of Yaakov. So that's actually what went on over here. But it's interesting, when the brothers answered Yaakov back, should we make our sister free from? Yaakov didn't answer them.
Yeah.
Well, at least not what the Torah says. Which means, no, Yaakov screamed at the boys, "You fouled me, you know. So the brothers answered back, the last pasuk, "Hachzeini yaseh, we're going to make our sister free from, we have to stick up for our sister." Uh-huh. Yaakov didn't answer. Which means that he agreed to what they answered. And like we said last week, but it's late already. Both things are right. The brothers had to do what they did. Yaakov had to do what he did. Both are right. Because if not, the Torah wouldn't tell us both sides of what happened. The brothers had to do what they did. Yaakov